Welcome back to Community Connections. Now, I have with me Grant Hutchison. Now, Grant, we want to have change track a little bit this month. I know that you've been, well, I would consider you a sane man.
Others may Thanks, have Alan. Other views. I'd like to reciprocate.
Theories, but, and I know that you have stood and won pre-selection for the Liberal Party for a seat, I think, down Croydon Way, somewhere that way.
Well, let's not talk about that.
Well,
I'm happy to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
I want to talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
What I want to know is, why would a guy who's got a career, I'm staggered for words, why would Grant Hutchison want to stand as a politician? Why would you want to become a politician?
It was always part of my dream to serve the community in one of a couple of ways.
Let me just stop you there.
Yeah.
But at what age? Like at three, you didn't decide you wanted to be a politician?
No, not at three. At three, I think I still wanted to be a fireman.
Yeah. Or a policeman.
I don't know that I ever got to the policeman stage. One of my grandsons wants to be a policeman until he saw what happened to until he saw that... that attack on the police. Anyway, look, leave that to one side. No. So in terms of my own life, I can't remember the age, but I thought these are some skills that I can bring, and it would be great to serve either in the legal field or a natural other related field is politics in terms of rather than the administration, the making of laws. Of course, we've got the separation of powers.
Well, so I was just going to say that. You said either law or politics. So you get into law, you've been successful in law, and so all of a sudden you want to swap the politics. I personally couldn't be bothered with politics as a profession.
And there's a lot of people feeling that way. I know I've been out door knocking and doing listening posts, and what I've found is that people... One of the saddest things I've found is that the older people will take time to talk to you. Yep. The younger ones who are going to be impacted the most by what's going on are the ones quite often who will say, and I'm often there with a young person, and they show no interest, not interested in this. And so, but I believe that properly administered, a society that is well run, including good laws, is a better society for my grandchildren. It's a better society for everybody's grandchildren and also the current generation. And so look, I don't want to take sides in this, but it was always a belief that I would have something I could contribute, and that's where I'd love to contribute. But does that answer your question?
Yeah.
You still look sceptical.
Well, it does a bit. But, I mean, and I know that in politics, because I do know some politicians personally, and they're very nice people, but when they get into the chamber, and I know that's only a short period of a day, but they just lie and sling stuff at each other, and you think, why would you bother to do that?
Yeah, I heard. I'm not endorsing that statement, but I did see or talk to somebody who said who'd served some time in politics, a great guy, and he just said to me, Grant, I haven't met the person yet who, having got into the parliament, comes out a better person. And he'd been through that experience himself. So I think I take those comments on board. I hope I don't disintegrate I believe that at the age I am, I know who I am, and I'd like to think that I can make a contribution that out of years of experience of helping people with different issues that have come up in their life, I can then be a part of a practical solution, because there are some things, there are some policies that just show only bureaucrats can understand them a certain way, and I believe a real-life example of running a business and whatever, you know, wherever that goes, but also in terms of working through whatever's going to happen. I've seen things for my parents, I've seen them for myself, I've seen them for my children and for my grandchildren, and that's where I believe... I believe out of a lifetime of service, that's when you should go into politics. So I've had a lifetime of service. I've served on the aged care as a board member. I've served on many, many boards and many, many organisations as a volunteer. Yep. And this is hopefully an opportunity to give back. Now,
Because one of the things...
But I don't believe I have all the answers either.
One of the things that that I... I'm just trying to find something here at the same time on the computer. I don't want to get into politics. Yeah. I don't like talking about politics. It's not about that. It's more talking about what the certain... what things happen.
Yep, I think we're both avoiding that.
I would say, and I don't want to stick up for Jeff Kennett at all, but I would say one of the best things Jeff Kennett ever did was Beyond Blue. I reckon he achieved
that's after
more
he left.
With Beyond Blue than what he ever did as a politician. I also interview a guy named Victor Perton. Now, you probably
know Victor.
Victor Perton.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrific guy.
Yep. And I would say, very positive guy.
Well, I would say, out of the positivity and that he's probably done more for the population in his current role as with this positive organisation than what he could have ever achieved as a politician.
And in part, I believe it's because of the platform that they have, having been a former premier in Jeff's case or yep. having been a minister in Victor Perton's case. Yep. They're able to use that because they have a certain sense of connection and networking that then allows them. Because if you or I just set up, we're about positivity, which is Victor's yep. Very strong on, I don't think you'd have the same reach as having been a premier and then doing
yep.
it. And you're right, Jeff has done a fantastic job. I think Julia Gillard took it over after.
Yes, she did.
So politicians of different persuasions have some things in common.
What surprised me there was that he, in fact, was the one who suggested that Beyond Blue go to Julia Gillard. Now, yeah. In a normal situation, they probably wouldn't even talk to each other. And yet, when it came down to somebody to replace him, from what I read, he was the one who suggested that, hey, you should go after Julia Gillard. She'd do the job well.
Well, that's right. She'd left the political
yep.
scene.
Yep.
And so he could see another person and probably national profile rather than just a high yep. state profile. I think Jeff's got higher recognition than just in Victoria,
yep.
but Julia had definitely had a national. Yep. So I think that's what you start to see. And sometimes in politics, it's not the people that you're sitting with, yep. but it's the people across the chamber that if you can reach across the chamber, you can get a lot more done.
Yeah,
so.
If you don't kill them. Well, you don't throw them. Anyway, I've got to take a break. I want to get off politics. I've got something else I want to talk to you about. Now, Grant, I picked up the local paper this morning on the way here, as I normally do, although I must have I had to whiz in next door to the Lions Op Shop to get a copy. By the way, I should mention the Lions Op Shop in there do a terrific job. They're there every week. They're open till about 2 o'clock every day of the week, including Saturday. They're not there Sunday. They got some great bargains in there. I often go and buy a CD, and I've bought a few shirts and bits and pieces. So if you're down this way, pop into the Op Shop in there at number 7... Lilydale Road in Hillsville, and go in and talk to them. They're a great crew in there. But anyway, I went in there and pinched their paper because I'd read a story this morning about National, and I see a guy there by the name of Les Hutchison. Is he any relation to you?
Yes, he is my father.
He's your father? He takes credit.
He does take credit where credit's due. Yep. And, he was a young man in... And apparently his girlfriend liked to see him in uniform, and they got married. So
that's your mother?
Yeah. So the article actually has a photo of him sitting on what looks like a rock, and with a tree in the background, probably taken up at Puckapunyal.
Right.
So, that was 1951 it began. We were just trying to work out 75 years. So on Valentine's Day, they're celebrating. You don't have to think about your wife. You can just celebrate National Service.
So what... Well... Was there another reason other than his girlfriend liked to see him in a uniform? there wasn't compulsory Nasho at 75 years ago, was it? Like, he would have enlisted himself.
No, he got called up. As I understand it, the Cold War tensions were growing due to the, I think, Korean Wars had already started, and governments believed something had to be done. So 51, what's that, 6 years after World War II?
Yeah.
And so things are starting to hot up, the Cold War, so maybe relationships are freezing over.
Yep.
And so they brought back, they brought in this defence force so that you did national service. It would be compulsory.
Compulsory for everyone, was it?
It says it was brought in to undertake military service during the period where every 18-year-old was conscripted.
Oh, yeah.
According to those. So I think the time that you might have got called up was later.
Well, that was a birthday
ballot. Yes,
yeah, that was a marbles.
So he was off on a church camp at the time when he got notified, and he had 2 days to report to Puckapunyal. So off you go, and you take your civvies, your civilian clothes. You went there up in those, and you came back in a uniform.
And how long was he at Pucca, do you know?
I don't know exactly. I think there was a number of days. You had to have trading obligations of 176 days.
So then did he see overseas duty, or was he just called up and didn't have to go?
No, he didn't have to go. He was... And doing this didn't... if you joined the... In terms of conscription, you joined the Navy or the Air Force, you could be forced to go overseas, but not necessarily into a... military combat zone, but in terms of being part of the Army Reserves, that wasn't the same. So after you'd done that, then you continued to do something else where you were part of, I think it was the Citizens Military Force Unit, and so a bit like what we would call the Reserves today.
Yep. So not Dad's Army.
Well, Dad's Army, I've seen some examples of Dad's Army in my time. And you don't know. No one wants to be thought of. In fact, Ingram, who also talks, said that the person who is in charge of his unit was considered a bit slack, or no, maybe not slack. He just said that he was replaced and he didn't like the new guy. But at the end of the day, and I think he spoke in not flattering terms of my father, seemed to enjoy it. But this other guy, I think his name is Don Ingram, he talked about it being... It stopped him from some things that he wanted to do in life, but at the end he could see the benefit of it. Yep. And I think that's always, if at the end you can see the benefit, it's worth it.
Did your father believe it was good for him?
I believe so.
Because not everybody, when they're conscripted, likes it. You can not like it, but did he believe it sort of made him a better person?
I don't think he's ever said to me that he thought it made him a better person. I think it exposed him to... the military service, and I think, he's never complained about it, and I think that's probably the best I can say at this stage. I can ask him for you. So
I've got to take a quick break. Sure. I want to come back and talk just a little bit more about that. So your father became had dead national service, which I think that the confusion I had was that the when the Vietnam War conscription came out, it was decided by your birth date. You pull out a marble and of a month and another one that had a date, and if that was it, you're in. I think this was different. It was for everybody, but with the Vietnam one, you had a very good chance of going overseas. So what did your father eventually do as a job? Was he in law as well?
No, not exactly. So everybody's career touches on law in some way or other, but maybe not as a lawyer. So he had been a bank officer, and this is something I learnt when I was reading the article. He'd actually been working for a bank.
What do you mean?
I didn't know that he'd been working for a bank. I always knew him as a person who had been working for the Australian Treasury. I know he'd got invited to, at one stage, to leave that and pursue this new magazine called Women's, or be involved in something called Women's Weekly. I think Carrie Packer.
With Carrie Packer.
So he said no. Often what defines you is what you say no to in life. As much as what you say yes to. So he chose not to go that way, but that would have been a fascinating career for him. I don't know whether he would have lasted, because I think Kerry was all about loyalty.
I believe I've read a couple of stories about him, and in the real early days I worked for his father, Sir Frank Packer, because my first job was at Channel 9.
Yep.
And they tell me that he was a tough man, Kerry. But if you did what he wanted him, what he wanted you to do, and you stayed loyal to him. He saw you as family, and he really looked after you very, very well. But if you didn't, you could be out on your head in
10 seconds.
In 10 seconds, yeah,
or less. So. And so, look, that was part of his career. He became a Deputy Commissioner of Taxation.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, you better get out of it.
Come 30 June, he used to say many happy returns at the end of the year. So, and he oversaw the review of our tax system when he was asked to do a report about whether we should move from the old system, which is where you submitted your material and the tax office issued you an assessment, to self-assessment.
Yep.
Where effectively the government started by saying, we accept what you tell us as your self-assessment. You take the responsibility. We're not assessing it.
And if we prove you're wrong...
And if you're wrong, you've got all sorts of consequences.
You're going to go.
But he spent time in London, did different conferences around the world. And, yeah, look, he enjoyed what he did. But getting back to National Service, and just so you know, it was for 6 years, from 1951 to 1957, and there were 33,000 youth that were trained annually under the National Services, and in 1957 it dropped to about 12,000 that were trained that year. So effectively it was a huge undertaking to get the population in the midst of what looked like we needed to be ready for anything with the military, in a military sense. I wonder how that would go today with new human rights and other provisions around these things.
And there has been some people said that would bring down the crime rate, that if everybody did some training. Whether that would be or not, I don't know. I don't think they'd ever get it in these days, with, as you say, with human rights and all that.
But I think one of the things they teach is not that you're strongest because you fire your gun at everything, but it's knowing restraint, knowing when and how to use the power that you've got there. So, look, he certainly enjoyed it, but this guy Ingham, he wasn't pleased about his call up at all.
Was he?
No, apparently not. And given it's coming up to Valentine's Day, it's probably worth knowing that he was playing footy at Yarra Glen, and that just won the last game to make into the finals. And I'm reading from the article.
Yep.
And he got the call up, and he had to miss the final series. And he also wasn't happy because being in the CMF, which is the...
Citizen Military Force.
Yes, yep. because that would take him out on Friday nights, and there was a girl from Yarra Glen that he was interested in, that lived in Yarra Glen. So given that we're out here at Hillsville, I don't know who the lady was, but he or she, both of them missed out. So... National Service would get in the way. For an 18-year-old, when a young man's thoughts might turn to love...
It could have very easily killed a budding romance.
Who knows? And somebody else might have been the beneficiary.
Yeah, well, you never know how these things work out, do you?
But at the end, he said, once he got over the initial part of everything, he did enjoy it. And I think that's the refrain. Initially, I think my father enjoyed it from day one.
I just want to move on. Sure. I want to move on because I've got to take a break too. Did he, when they brought the GST in,
yes,
did your father have a thought about that? Was he happy about it, or he saw it as a good way or a bad way?
I remember him discussing it at the time, and he saw it as it broadened the base.
Yep.
And so rather than it being on income, it was on expenditure. In other words, rather than as money came in, and some people needed to, it's those who could afford to spend their money. Now, we all know everyone has to spend their money on something, so it's, but there were some things that were excluded, basic... I think it was milk. There were some things that were excluded, basic necessities, and I think that always seemed to irritate the Treasurer at the time.
Yep.
There were some things that were excluded. But a taxation system based on spending, assuming there was enough money to survive, it meant that those who lived a lavish lifestyle had to pay more tax on that broad-based tax.
Also, I don't know whether it ever did it or not. It was supposed to get rid of the black economy too, wasn't it? People who paid cash.
It didn't.
But I don't think it ever got rid of that.
No, I think the black economy is still strong, and I could probably, we all probably know someone who still thrives in cash is still there.
So what sort of celebration are these Nashos having, do you know?
It's on the 14th and 15th of February. I think it's just a recognition. I don't think they'll upstage Valentine's Day on the 14th, but they may well upstage. It'll hit the presses. And so for people who are local, it's a good reminder of what we've been a part of and to remember what's taken place. I don't think, you know, there's obviously having a newspaper article is something, but I think I doubt they'll mint another medal for everybody.
No, I wouldn't think so. And it said here between 51 and 59, possibly 50 local 18-year-olds in the district underwent compulsory national training.
Yeah, there were exceptions. You could get out, but they were very hard to get through. So. Yeah. So if you weren't medically fit, you could get out, but otherwise it was very hard. It would be very hard to say that you're a conscientious objector to training alone if you're never going to be taken to an active war zone.
Well, they didn't even do that much with the compulsory one for Vietnam. Got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. Back to Community Connections. And of course, Catherine, if you're listening, don't worry too much. I know that there is a big traffic jam down there in Coldstream. It happened to me this morning. Belinda, that was in here between noon, she fell into the same hole. There are roadworks there. Look, just get here whenever you can. Don't stress. We can play a bit of music till we get here. So I know there are problems down there, and I certainly had it this morning. Right, Grant, you wanted to talk about, I'm not sure what this means, but just tell me.
Well, I suppose the social liberal ideas of justice, what qualifies as justice and...
Now, hang on, are we talking about justice, what we think, or what is a legal termination of justice?
It's more the philosophy behind it. You know, is it true that the same social circumstances bear on different individuals and therefore produce a different result? Or are we really it's not because of some free moral choice, but the individual concerned has their own way of doing things. It's rather fraught with, should you be responsible or should you say I'm a victim of circumstances?
And I was just going to say to you, so what are you saying, that if I'm born poor and therefore I commit a robbery, that I'm less responsible than for the person who's rich and commits a crime? Because the first one's doing it out of necessity, the second one's doing it more because they choose that.
I think would anybody in your circumstances basically have the same reaction? Is it that you're born of those circumstances, whether you're... So if everybody was born with certain conditions, and so do you say, I'm not exactly... We're not exactly on the same point. But if you could say, look at me, I was unemployed, I hadn't eaten for 3 days, and I went in and shoplifted some food.
Yep.
Does that person have the same... Would anybody in those circumstances do the same? I don't think so. There are different ways of getting a feed, particularly in this day and age. But
the law doesn't differentiate, does it? I mean, a shoplifter is a shoplifter.
A shoplifter is a shoplifter, but I think when it comes to looking at what sentence should be imposed...
Yep.
So the guilt or innocence, the shoplifter is a shoplifter.
Yep.
But in terms of what will be the consequences, if you... Because we had a very famous person, I think the... I won't say who, but a very, very high celebrity person whose spouse was known for the five-finger discount.
And yep.
So would a person who had no need but simply a compulsion of taking things, should they be treated the same way as somebody else? And normally I think you'll find most magistrates take into account if you needed it for your... You took something because your child was... You hadn't been able to feed your child. But the story is that magistrates here would be...
let me just throw another one at you. In my job, I travelled up to 80,000 kilometres a year.
Sure.
So... If I got, it's all right, somebody's just sending me a message, the next person, because they're running late. They're called, they've caught up in these...
We can keep robots. Going as long as you like.
No, they won't be that long. So if I was silly enough to get caught speeding and lose my licence, my penalty would have been double the person who was only a weekend driver, because I would have lost my job or I couldn't have done my job. So, where to say? How do you? I mean,
yep. Let's talk about. You're dealing with an issue which is what's called a strict liability offence, which is quite often for a crime you have to prove both the intention, the mens rea, and the actus reus, which is the guilt, the act which is wrong, and the guilty mind, the mind that knows they're doing the wrong thing.
Right.
When it comes to these type of speeding and other things, it's strict liability. They don't care about your intention. They just look at what the act was, because otherwise everybody's going to say, I didn't know I was over, I didn't intend to.
But then that happens in a lot of court cases, though, where you get, I didn't know, I drunk too much, and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. So they do use some of this stuff, don't they?
So they do, but not in a strict liability offence. Strict liability is just where the intention or the mens rea, the guilty mind, is not the relevant factor. It's simply, did you or didn't you speed? Were you over the limit? So we have to, and there are certain, particularly with drink driving, everybody always had a reason why it was going to impact them so disastrously.
Yep.
And so in the end, the court just said, look, this is it. This is what's going to happen. And so took away some of the discretion that otherwise was being exercised by magistrates, because they wanted to send a clear and unambiguous message. You drink and you drive, there are consequences, and we need to make the roads a safe place.
Okay. Got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
You drive me crazy.
Welcome back to Community Connections. And Catherine, if you're listening, don't stress. We know about the roadworks. I got caught in them this morning. Belinda got caught in them. So just get here when you can. Like, don't stress. We'll be right. Grant, you wanted to wind up talking about what the kids do in cars.
Well, I think it's a good message to give someone stuck in their car. games you can play while in the car. I think it's... And I know as a young child, I know my family used to do a lot of singing in the car, but that wasn't a game. That was a it was a chore. But one of the things we used to play was car cricket. And so,
how do you play car cricket?
That's a good question. On a Volkswagen, so one, the front seat versus the back seat. And so the front seat,
and you count the cars. And your parents had a Volkswagen?
No, no. That if you, so you would count the cars coming in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And if there was a Volkswagen, you're out. So a beetle,
yeah,
and you went out.
Yeah.
And so otherwise, everything counts as one run. I think for a bus, if a bus came along, you doubled your score. If a motorbike, you reversed your score. So if you're on 679 runs, you'd suddenly be 176 runs. So you've reversed your score. So there was a bit of maths, yep. A bit of everything. It was engaging. I think sometimes. We used to have so many. We'd have front seat, middle seat, and the very back. And that was a lot harder if you're in the very back because you were normally looking out the back. So that was before seatbelts were compulsory. What about yourself, though, Alan? What did you play?
Well, I think when I was growing up, we used to have what's the word?
I spy.
I spy. And even my little granddaughter, well, she's... six now, so she'd probably be a bit better now, but when she's about four and five, she'd say, starts with T. So you'd go around everywhere and there's
tree
and T, yeah. And trees and that, and she'd say, there, that lawn.
Yes, excellent. Well, I think she had you figured out, so...
But nowadays, the kids, pardon me, in a lot of cars, they've got a screen on the back of mum and dad's seat, and they sit there and watch videos.
Well, that's one way. If you want more device time, I don't think that's the recommended way. I think that idea of engagement, even if it can be boring at times, with I Spy, what I found with younger children is it's just I see something that's blue, or I see so it's easier to go with. With colours rather than in terms of letters for some kids. So, and that's often before they're at that stage of spelling. Maybe your granddaughter needs...
She's right now. pardon me, she's in the first grade at school. So she's
fine now.
So she now knows. But yeah, she used to be terrible. But we had a lot of fun.
But keeping people occupied and keeping things real, it brings about community, a sense of doing things together. So you can do scavenger hunts when you're out and about. You can do all sorts of things. But I think while you're staying in the car, it's. I know my mother used to sing something about the cow keep Nelly and the belly in the barn. And
never heard that one.
Never. Oh, well, the sun shone bright. No, the moon shone bright on Mrs. Porter and so it ought to, and her daughter, because they washed their feet in muddy water and they stunk or something. something along those lines. So there were various songs that they. Have imprinted themselves somewhere in my mind, but I think it's the memories of the trip. So we used to travel all the way to Queensland every second year for a family holiday,
right.
And that's spend time on the beach, it's get burnt long, up there rather than get burnt
it's,
down.
It's
here.
A long way to get up there. Grant, I'll just ask you one thing on law, which has amazed me. I had the Highway Patrol in, and I've interviewed them three or four times last year, and they tell me over 50% of the road accidents, people are not wearing seatbelts. Are not wearing seatbelts.
That surprises me.
And on some of these cars, and mine doesn't, mine's a bit older, but some of these cars... If there's nobody on the seatbelt, then you get the beep on the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But the Highway Patrol were telling me they clasp it together and they sit on it.
I do know someone in my family who did that. She's now passed on. And that was her way of getting around it in the early days. I haven't heard of anyone else doing it. It didn't set an example for the rest of us. Well, it's just so much easier to... So I didn't realise half the people...
Over half the people involved in fatal accidents do not... are not wearing a seatbelt.
Oh, that makes a difference. Yeah, so if you have an accident and you don't have a seatbelt on, you're more likely to have a fatality.
I don't understand why anybody would do that. We all know the laws.
I think there are some people who value their own freedom and choices above what's considered the law. So there's a risk. Remember in the US there was a case where a person was pulled over and it looked like they had a seatbelt. It was actually a snake that they had. Anything to look like you had a seatbelt, but if you get pulled over or if you have an accident, the snake's not going to save you.
I remember years ago, this is when seatbelts first came in. I think they were a law by this stage of the game, and I had an E.H. Holden, and you had the seatbelt across that. And the girl I was with at the time, she was sitting beside me as we were able to when we didn't have bucket seats, and the police pulled me up.
Really?
And they said, she hasn't got a seatbelt on. I said, yes, she has. She had a little lap. A little lap seatbelt. And he said, all right, there we go.
Harder to see.
But it was hard to...
But those belts, in the early days, those belts were quite uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But now we've got the ones that stretch and they stop if there's a rapid movement. I think to not have a seatbelt on today is choosing to put yourself in danger.
Yeah, and I can't understand why you do it, but...
But the law is that if you're found if you're found guilty, don't say I intended to put it on, because with the alarms you can get those alarms adjusted or but it's why.
Why would you do it?
Eventually, I think. So I might be told. Eventually, the alarms, if you ignore them long enough, they do.
All right. Time for me to have to go. Thanks for your coming in again today, Greg.
Always a pleasure, Alan.
And wish your dad well for his 75th anniversary. I'm sure they'll have a few odd little drinks together over the weekend. But thank you for your time, and we'll look forward to talking to you again.
Have a great one. Bye.
Thanks. See you. Bye.